Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to watch and listen this afternoon. It has been an eventful day. This morning we announced a suspected case of COVID-19. An individual contacted our 111 line to tell us that they had received a positive result to a private test. They had chosen to do this ahead of travelling off island. As a precaution, we issued that individual with a direction notice instructing them to self-isolate for 14 days along with other members of their household. Because the result was from a private test and not carried out through our official testing service at Nobles Hospital, we immediately offered the individual a second test using our professional and robust PCR system. I am pleased to report that this second test has returned a negative result. The individual and their household will continue to isolate before a third test on Sunday. If this also returns a negative result, the direction notices will be lifted. The initial indications are that the private test result is what is referred to as a false positive. No test has 100% accuracy. We have discussed this before at these briefings. There is always a risk of false positives as well as false negatives. This is why our self-isolation requirements are so important. The types of private testing available vary widely, as does the accuracy of these tests, which is one of the reasons why we continue to use the gold standard of PCR for all of our tests on island. Now, apart from today's suspected case, since speaking to you this time last week, we have had three confirmed cases of COVID-19 on the island. All three have been individuals who are already self-isolating, having recently travelled back to the island. The self-isolation period of these individuals was extended by a further 14 days following the positive result, and other members of their household have also been instructed to self-isolate for 14 days. Self-isolation remains the most effective way of preventing the virus from spreading in our community. Those affected have my personal thanks. I am grateful to you for acting responsibly and following the rules. In doing so, you are helping to protect our island. In summary, we can be relatively certain that today our community remains free of COVID-19. Today's suspected case is a timely reminder that we must be prepared. I touched upon this last week. The situation in the United Kingdom continues to be a source of concern to us all. In recent days, we have seen further measures announced aimed at slowing the spread of the virus. The United Kingdom government has introduced a new three-tier alert system. This is designed to designate areas that are a medium, high and very high risk of the virus. The Liverpool City region was immediately designated as very high risk, with the most stringent measures activated. This includes the closure of pubs that do not serve food. The UK media is also reporting that Greater Manchester and Lancashire may also be designated as very high risk. My thoughts and best wishes go out to all our friends in the United Kingdom, and especially those in the North West, where we have such deep and warm links. In Northern Ireland, the executive announced a number of new measures yesterday to reduce the spread of the virus. This will see the shutdown of the hospitality sector and an extension of the half-term holidays from 1 week to a fortnight. Given the situation around us, it is more important than ever for us to protect ourselves against the arrival of the virus. We all need to be prepared. If the virus does return to the island, as individuals, this may mean that we have to start using face masks in certain environments, return to social distancing, or restrict our social gatherings. For businesses and organisations, it may mean measures to support the public with hand hygiene and social distancing. I do not want this to happen, but we need to be ready. As a government, we have invested heavily in our testing capabilities and capacity. At the start of this pandemic, we had no on-island testing capability, instead being reliant on laboratories in the United Kingdom. We worked quickly to purchase the right equipment and consumables and were able to offer up to 300 tests a day on island. We have since invested further and now have the capacity to carry out 800 COVID tests each day. If the virus does immunity, our strategy is simple. Test, 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 trace, trace, trace. If you cast your minds back to June, you may remember that government published Stay Responsible and sent a copy to every household. It set out a four-level framework that we would use based on the number of cases of COVID-19 in our community. Since the 15th of June, we have been on level one, which we call Stay Responsible. This was when social distancing ended. We remain on level one. We will remain at level one for as long as the rolling three-day average of COVID-19 cases in the community is between 0 and 5. If the rolling three-day average of COVID-19 cases in the community increases to between 6 and 10, we will move to level two, the stay safe phase. This would see social distancing reintroduced, a limit of 2 visitors inside households, and a limit on outdoor gatherings of 30 people. Level three, the stay at home phase, would activate if the rolling three-day average of COVID-19 cases in the community rose to between 11 and 20. Finally, level four, lockdown, would activate if the rolling three-day average hit 21 or more. Now, these plans are a guide. We may have to adopt them depending on our circumstances, but this would be our starting point. We have talked a lot about borders at these briefings. Given the situation around us, the Council of Ministers has agreed that we will remain at level four. On the topic of travel and our borders, the Minister of Education, Sport and Culture has issued a statement advising parents to avoid taking school-aged children off island over half term. If they do travel, they will have to self-isolate for 14 days on their return, missing a fortnight of face-to-face teaching in the classroom. I would echo this message. I think we all need to think carefully about any travel off island, given the situation in the United Kingdom and Ireland. On a more positive note, last Friday the Queen's Birthday Honours were announced. These were delayed from June in order to consider nominations for people who played crucial roles during the first months of the COVID-19 effort. 7 islanders were recognised by Her Majesty the Queen for their achievements and contributions to the life of our community. 3 of these honours specifically related to the island's COVID response. I extend my congratulations to all 7 individuals, but given the nature of these briefings, today I will focus on the 3 that were recognised for their work and our community's COVID response. Mr. Peter Duffy, a consultant urologist at Nobles Hospital, has been made an MBE. Unable to continue his usual surgical work during COVID, Peter dedicated himself to helping patients and staff around the wards in whatever way was needed. He fed and washed patients, served meals, cleaned and changed beds, and attended intensive care twice a day to help ventilated patients feel more comfortable. He contacted the wards on his days off to check on patients' progress and staff welfare. A caring man, Mr. Duffy sat with and read to the end-of-life patients to comfort them in the absence of their relatives. All his care and assistance was on his own initiative. He was an example to those around him. When the island was first struck by COVID-19 and went into lockdown, Gareth Hinge quickly realised that vulnerable people in the north needed support, particularly with food and regular medicines. Along with fellow coaches at Ramsey Rugby Club, he organised a team of club members to provide that support. He coordinated the efforts and, once the concept was proven, expanded the team to embrace volunteers from the wider community. For an initiative of this sort to succeed required vision, leadership, organisation and determination, all of which Graham showed. He also united the rugby club and the wider population. For outstanding community service to the Isle of Man during COVID-19 pandemic, Mr. Gareth Hinge was also awarded an MBE. Since March 2020, the Manx community has shown remarkable courage and compassion in the face of the pandemic. David Ashford, the Minister for Health and Social Care, has been at the centre of the island's efforts to suppress the spread and has shown strong leadership in our health and social care services. He has absorbed medical information and presented it to you, the public, in, I'm sure you will agree, a clear and understandable way. He has appeared here at numerous briefings, answering questions with kindness and humour in equal measure. We will always remember his baby steps. He has instilled confidence at a challenging time for all and has shown selfless commitment and an unquestionable sense of duty. For this, David was awarded an MBE. David, would you like to say a few words?
To be honest, Chief Minister, it's still a shock because at the end of the day, I've just been doing the job that I get paid to do. But the way I view this award is not about me. I view it as about the work that has been undertaken across DHSC and our entire health and care sector. That's why I was delighted to hear about Peter Duffy's award, because the people who've been on the front line of this, they have worked day in, day out tirelessly. The other night I got a chance to speak to many of them at a reception for the Year of the Nurse, and listening to all of the things that they sacrificed family-wise so our community could be safe was absolutely amazing. So the way I view it, this is recognition of all that hard work, and I'd just like to put on record again my thanks to everyone in DHSC and across our entire health and care sector on the island, because they've been the real heroes of this pandemic. Thank you, Chief Minister.
Well, congratulations, David, and to all that who have received an honour. And now to questions from the media. And first today, we have Josh Stokes from ITV Granada. Good afternoon, Josh. Pastor Mai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister and Health Minister. A question to both of you. In regards to the closing of Zurich International this morning, there's been some notable panic amongst the public. The spread may have occurred in the community. Now, Zurich International has said in a statement, as a precautionary measure, everyone has been sent home. But if it turns out cases are confirmed there, does that suggest some sort of spread in the community? And does the situation concern you there? And are you involved with any of the actions taking place there?
Right. Well, I think, as I said in my opening gambit, Josh, we have done our PCR test on the person and they've come back as negative. So whilst we are always cautious and we will do another test just to confirm that, we are not treating this as a community case at this moment in time. I don't know, David, if you want to expand on that, please.
Yeah, I can add some more to it, Josh. In relation to Zurich, my understanding is it isn't the supposed positive case that worked at Zurich. It's one of the high-risk contacts that was identified off the back of them. They have all been tested as well. We've got four of those seven high-risk contact test results backed so far, and they are all negative as well. Certainly, there was no advice given to Zurich by the Department of Health and Social Care or Public Health of the measures they had to take. That is something they decided as a business that they wanted to do as a precautionary measure.
And your next question, Josh.
Yeah, thank you. Next question really follows on in a way. There's a real worry and fear now amongst the public about when there may be a spread in the community. For many, it almost feels like only a matter of time. And the amount of time you spend talking about what will happen if the virus does start spreading, especially today in the speech, is noticeable. So ultimately, do you still have faith that the current coronavirus strategy in regards to self-isolation will not cause any spread in the community?
Well, it's up to individuals. If everyone respects the rules that we've put in place, we will not get COVID-19 in the community. It's as simple as that. However, we have to ensure that we remain vigilant and we can't be complacent. So the Council of Ministers discusses papers on a regular basis. I know we've got a couple of papers for next Thursday, a week today, to discuss on whether we need to tighten up some of the isolation processes. And if we feel there is a need, then obviously we will announce that next week. But at this moment in time, I am confident that if people respect it and the Great Manx public have not let us down to date, that we will be okay. But what we're trying to do is just encourage people to remain active in their stance against this terrible illness and to keep up the good work that they've been doing. We've seen what can happen if people don't respect it. We are in a good position, and I genuinely, and I'm sure everyone on the island wants to stay in the position that we find ourselves on the island. I don't know, David, if you want to expand on that.
Yeah, but just to say, Josh, that, you know, at the end of the day, a virus is a hidden enemy. We've been in a very good position here on Ireland, again, down to the Great Manx public and the way they've reacted. But it is important we don't get complacent. And as a government, I think it would be very remiss of us not to have plans in place for if there were emergence of community cases. We obviously hope there won't be. The systems we have in place are very robust, including the track and trace that we have. But, you know, we've got to be prepared for that. And I think we would be very remiss of us if we didn't have that framework in place. And that's why it's there. But I would, as I've urged all along, people should not become complacent about this. We've had an excellent response so far, and the island is in a position that many jurisdictions would give anything for, but we do have to be prepared just in case it should emerge at any point.
Thanks very much, Josh. Thank you. We now move on to Simon Richardson from Business 365. Good afternoon, Simon. Faster my.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and may I add my congratulations to the Health Minister on his well-deserved award and to the other recipients. Firstly, to you, Chief Minister, do you feel any sense of inevitability that a second wave will happen on the island at some stage? And if a decision was reached that the island would close its borders completely again and introduce new restrictions on movement and business, whose decision would it be? Would it be you alone, or would it be a vote in the Council of Ministers?
Well, first and foremost, I don't think anything is inevitable. I think if we all follow the rules and keep on working together, we will be okay. But this administration, along with all of Tynwald, is working hard to ensure that if there is a second case, if we get it on the island, that we are well prepared. We're not complacent. We've got our procedures in place. As I said earlier, we've increased our testing from 300. Well, we started off with relying on two labs, mainly in Manchester, to on island 300, now up to 800. So we have been planning to be ready should a second wave come onto the island, but I don't think it's inevitable if people respect all the rules and procedures. But I wanted to reassure people that should it happen, we are ready, we're planning, and we are prepared for it. No decision is made on something to close borders, etc., without obviously Council of maybe National Strategy Group and then the Council of Ministers having a meeting, discussing and taking a decision together. We collectively discuss everything on that matter. And then obviously something that's serious, we would be, of course, talking with all of our colleagues in Tynwald as well.
Thank you. My second question is for the Health Minister, actually. We've been told regularly of the importance of getting a flu jab. It does seem, though, that there's quite a severe shortage of the vaccine on the island. People under 65 are finding difficulty getting one, even if they're only maybe weeks or months short of their 65th birthday. Is this a situation that is likely to improve in the coming weeks?
So the flu vaccine arrives in the island in batches, because of storage and the way it's got to be delivered. Flu orders have to be in February each year. So the GPs, the pharmacies and the department put their orders in February. There is the ability after that to place further orders, which we have done. But it's not just something affecting us, obviously with worldwide demand and also demand in the UK as well. There is a shortage between what people would want in order to meet all demand, but compared to what's actually available. So there is some pinch points at the moment, but we've been working with our partners in the UK to see what we can do about extra capacity, because actually normally in most normal seasons there's actually an overcapacity, so there's more flu jabs available than what are required. But obviously, quite sensibly, with the way things have gone this year, more and more uptake. So we are working to see what we can do to actually get more capacity into the system. So although there's pinch points at the moment, it's not reached what I would term a crisis point of people being able to access the flu jab. But obviously we will be prioritising the vulnerable groups above everyone else.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Simon. And now we move to Alex Bell from BBC Isle of Man. Good afternoon, Alex. Fastamai.
Hello, good afternoon. Possibly one for the Health Minister here. As Liverpool and Manchester and other places in the northwest go into tighter modes of restriction, what will be the effects on Manx patients who travel to these cities for hospital appointments?
So in terms of hospital appointments, we've been dealing with our partners in the northwest. The setup in those hospitals is very similar to the setup we had here in Nobles, where there will be what will be termed clean areas and then dirty areas, which are the COVID areas. So the separation of patients and people who may be presenting to the hospital with certain types of symptoms. They are trying to keep elective surgery going wherever possible. And also in relation to the more serious patients, they are continuing to see them. Where we may see a pinch point is in non-essential surgery, because we know that some hospitals in the northwest are already scaling down in relation to that. But we are working with our partners to try and keep the capacity wherever we can. And just as we did during the pandemic period, we are also looking at what ability we have to deliver maybe some of those treatments on island so that people don't have to travel in the first place.
Thank you. So as we've heard over the last couple of weeks, there have been increasing number of cases which have been found in residents who've returned from travels in the UK. It appears to be a bit of a chink in the armour that returning residents who may be carrying the virus can still self-isolate in a household with other people who haven't themselves travelled and who can mix in the community. You mentioned the Council of Ministers is considering changes to the self-isolation rules. Can you elaborate on what those might be and what they might entail?
Well, I think, Alex, you've just hit on one of the obvious ones to revisit. Obviously, when you look at the data of people who have had COVID and the effect on their all household members, I think off the top of my head, 86% of people in that household did not get COVID-19. The remaining percentage, 8% that got it from out of the house in another area, and only 6% caught COVID-19 from the member of the household who was infected. Now, when you look at the number of infections per 100,000, you feel that it's safe to allow, therefore, people living in a household, as long as they've followed all the rules and regulations on self-isolation in the household and sterilising door handles, bathrooms, kitchens, etc., then it's safe to allow the people in that household to continue. However, with the increasing number of the infection rate per 100,000 in the United Kingdom, and certainly in the northwest where all of our people tend to travel from, then it would be, it's logical and common sense and practical, in my opinion, that we revisit that to decide whether we're comfortable with allowing that situation to continue or whether we feel we need to impose a total lockdown off the household. And obviously that would have significant restrictions on maybe children going to school whose parents have had to go away for work, etc. So obviously it's something that we will be reviewing. We're constantly, that's not the only area. We constantly review on a regular basis. We cannot be complacent. We can't just sit back and wait for events to take place. We've got to be ready to make tough decisions as quickly as possible to ensure that we protect the people off the Isle of Man. But also we have to balance that with our economy and making sure that it continues to get strong and back on its feet again. It's a really tough balance, Alex, but we're doing our best, and we always share what's going on with the public at these briefings. But thank you very much for that question. Right, we now move on to Tim Glover from Manx Radio. Good afternoon, Tim. Fastamai.
Fastamai, good afternoon. Talking of testing, one of the chief scientists, Dr. Rachel Glover, has had a series of tweets of late, which I'll come to in two parts, if I may. The first is that she's not content with the numbers being tested currently. After 6 months, I'm finally working out who the people are who block the information I need to disseminate and circumnavigating them. And then we have, you would not believe the extent the middle to high level managers will go to protect their own jobs. I'm talking C-suite here. Information blockage is real. My decision this week is I'm going to talk to MHK's MLC and senior government directly. What is going on within the health department?
Well, obviously, I respect her views. I think she was concerned that I'd complain that the test that we do wasn't good enough. Now, our PCR test is the gold standard. It is the best out there. But it does not pick up COVID-19 if you're not shedding. So and there's no test, in our opinion, better than it. And she thought I was trying to make out that test, that I didn't have a high opinion of that test. I certainly do. It's whether or not you need to test. I suppose her view is that everyone should be tested. And if you test people and say from day one and they are not shedding COVID-19, then you will get a negative test result. They could then go on to wander around the island thinking that they're negative when in fact they develop COVID-19 because it hasn't started to shed. So you could give a false impression to people in the community. So there is obviously an argument about when you test, how often you should test. Now, obviously, if there was cases in the community, then you would see a mass introduction of testing again. But it's all about timing and when it's right to do. And we take advice from our medical experts. And at this moment in time, we're in a position where, because we believe we haven't got it in the community, we don't want to give out false messages to people by testing too soon. And the 14 days is the gold standard of isolation that we feel we're in the right position. But I'm sure David will want to expand on that.
Yes, thank you, Chief Minister. I mean, in terms of Dr. Glover, a lot of her messages I actually agree with in many ways. For instance, she's worried about the information lack from the 7-day and test going. And in fact, I think it was with you, Tim, I did an interview actually stating the fact that we would be looking potentially to introduce testing at a later date. She mentioned about day 12, day 14, possibly even day 10 when someone's in isolation. But as the Chief Minister said, if it's the early days of incubation, we do know from studies, particularly John Hopkins Medical Centre and their study, that PCR testing does have issues with identifying it in the very first few days. In terms of the where she's saying there's an issue around middle management and the information, I know she's frustrated because she wants to do widespread testing so we get that information. I don't quite agree with that. I don't think there is a blockage in middle management. But we do want to do more testing in that regard. But it also, the point with testing is it's got to be of value. Because testing is highly resource intensive if you're going to do it right. So it's not just about the microbiology side of it, of processing the tests, which Dr. Glover has been absolutely instrumental, I want to put on public record, with helping us expand our testing capacity. But also, don't forget, those swabs have to be taken by someone. So I could very easily now turn around and say we're going to do widespread testing, even although we've not got evidence of community transmission. But I have to then direct resource within DHSC to be able to do that. And people are wanting us, quite rightly, to be running a full health service alongside it, particularly with the situation we're currently in. So it's not just around the microbiology and capacity of testing. It's also around the capacity for swabbing. And there's got to be decisions made around that. I think, unfortunately, Dr. Glover misinterpreted what the Chief Minister said in Keys yesterday. The Chief Minister certainly wasn't referring to the fact that PCR testing isn't effective. Both myself and the Chief Minister have stood at this podium many times and used the phrase gold standard. It's been used again today because PCR testing is the most effective test out there.
I think it's safe to say, Tim, that we have very difficult decisions to make. We have to ensure that the health service gets back on track with all the procedures it delivers, that we protect the island from the best of our capabilities from a spread of any infection, and that we enable the economy to get back on track and people get jobs, money coming in to pay food, mortgages, bills, etc. So we're spinning an awful lot of plates. We're doing our best, but we do have regular reviews, and if we feel the situation changes, then we do quickly react to a situation. Your next question, Tim.
Yeah, I should say that she is no relation as well, and put that on the record as well. Second question is, you mentioned and you just alluded to it, Mr. Ashworth, there, about testing later in the 14-day self-isolation where somebody has tested positive for COVID-19. Where are we with that, and where are we with the review on the key workers?
So I'll hand over, I'll let the Chief Minister speak about the key workers in a moment. But in terms of the testing, there will be a paper hopefully going to Council of Ministers next week. We've got to remember with 7 day in test, it was there for a purpose. The reason we had the 7 day in test was people could pay for the test and then they could exit their full isolation. Yes, they were still restricted, but they could do other things. If we are sticking with the rigid 14 days, which is what we've introduced now, then although testing would give us the information, it wouldn't be necessarily of benefit to that individual. So we have to factor all that into the testing as well. But certainly, like I say, I mean, Dr. Glover went to Twitter when we got rid of the 7 day in test. And I did an interview with Manx Radio. I think it was a couple of days after where I said we would actually look at later potential testing. And I'm hoping that paper will come forward to Council Ministers next week.
Yeah, as I said, Tim, we're constantly reviewing it. And obviously key workers at this moment in time, key workers on all of NHS health and social care staff coming in are tested. That's not the case with all people coming to the island, and we are now looking at reviewing that situation where all key workers will be tested. Now, obviously, if you're just coming in for a few hours and back, that may not be practical, but that's something where we're tightening up as we speak, and we will be announcing that to you all, the new pathways for key workers. But let's not forget, there's only been just over 1,200 key workers have come in since we had the lockdown on the island. Nearly 50% of them were health and social care staff, and the rest were, I think, 50 for home affairs were needed. So we're not talking very large numbers. We've had, sadly, a couple of cases where they haven't respected our rules and regulations since we've had the problems. For example, we now ask them to queue in a separate line coming into the ports, where they are individually given the message that they must isolate, go straight to their accommodation. They are going to have to sign paperwork saying that they acknowledge that they have to go straight from the port to their home, and that if they break the rules and regulations, they accept that they know they will face up to 3 months imprisonment or a fine of up to £10,000. So we really are drilling it home with them. But at the end of the day, we need to ensure that A, our infrastructure is maintained, and B, that our businesses on the Isle of Man can continue to thrive and prosper. And it really is a balance. But we think we've got it right, but there are always times that you can tighten it up and improve it. That's what we're doing. Thank you very much, Tim. And now we turn to Rob Pritchard from 3FM. Good afternoon, Rob. Faster my.
Faster my, Chief Minister. My first question is for the Health Minister, please. It's a two-pronged one, if you don't mind. First of all, with regards to this term of a private test, just for clarity, what is the difference between a private test and the regular PCR routes?
So private tests come in many forms. They may be antigen tests rather than PCR. They may be the rapid tests as well. So basically, there's very different forms of private testing, and depending on which form you take, the accuracy can be very different. We use a proper PCR test with a long nasal swab and also the back of the throat. Some of the private tests come with the short swabs that necessarily might not be so accurate if it's a swab test. There's also saliva tests on the market as well. So it's very, very varied. We use the gold standard of PCR. The person was having a private test because it was one of those tests required to enter another country where you have to present a negative test so many days before you can enter another country. And that's why they ordered it. Unfortunately, with private testing, you will occasionally get false negatives and false positives. And in this case, it is looking very much like it was a false positive, because, as I say, the person has come back as being negative via our PCR test. We have also tested the 7 high-risk individuals that were identified. 4 of those tests are now back as we speak, and they're all negative as well. They will, of course, be swabbed again, as the Chief Minister said, on Sunday, but it is certainly at the moment looking like it is a false positive.
Thank you. The second part of the question, thank you very much for that, is if there is varying accuracy, I know you've said that there isn't 100% accuracy in any test, but if the PCR is the gold standard and the accuracy can vary a bit more with private ones, isn't there an argument that it should be encouraged more that you go down the PCR route instead of private tests where appropriate?
Well, actually, that's something we are already looking at within DHSC. At the moment, the legislation doesn't actually allow us to provide a private test for someone undertaking private travel because it's not related to them showing any symptoms or what was the 7-day in test having travelled back into the island. But we are looking to get that adapted so we can actually offer people who are going to travel to another country those tests. That's underway as we speak.
Thank you. My second question, just with regards to the UK largely, given the Tier 3 very high risk restrictions in the Liverpool City region and the Tier 2 ones coming in the likes of London, two of our main travel routes, whether in the pandemic or not, how is that going to affect, say, flight services in the short and long term between those two if those restrictions have to stay in place for a longer period?
Well, I think it's really important that we keep our connectivity with all of the areas that we normally fly to. So London will continue, Manchester, Liverpool will continue. Obviously, we have to revisit all the time the procedures that we've got in place, and that's something the Council of Ministers does all the time. So it will continue. It's important that we have that connectivity because it may well be that a really important key worker needs to come over. Even if we have no one flying as a member of the public just coming back to the island, it's important that we keep those connections there to get an important key worker, whether that be a medical expert or someone, say, to keep the incinerator going.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. And last but not least, we have Sam Turton from Isle of Man Newspapers. Good afternoon, Sam. Fast to my
Chief Minister. I just wonder if we could start with university students. We've become aware of more students looking at, they've been away, and I think it's fair to say university has not been what many of them thought it would be this year, and they're now looking at coming back early. What plans are in place for when students do return, and what has been discussed for when we do get closer towards Christmas and we do have a larger number seeking to travel both on air and on board the Ben McCrea, as it would be at the time?
Well, at this moment in time, Sam, they can come back. Obviously, they will have to quarantine for the full 14-day period, but obviously we expect to see a significant number coming back sometime in December. I know some will have assignments that they will have to hand in before they go back, and there will be a staggered approach. But obviously we will have to evaluate the situation in the UK at the time when we think the significant numbers are coming back and ensure that we have robust procedures in place. But I am committed to ensuring that our own students are able to get back home for Christmas.
Sorry, can I just check just on a clarity point there? When you say staggered approach, could it be that slots will be allocated for a return date for certain universities perhaps or regions?
Well, I haven't got any of those plans in place at the moment. By staggered, I mean that not all universities will have different end dates for their courses in December. I know some will be in the early December and some as late as the 18th of December to travel back. Obviously, some students may think, well, I'll do the last few days from home because I want to be able to go out in the new year, for example. But we will obviously look at the situation at the time. As the situation changes going forward, we will be prepared and ready for this to ensure that, yes, we get our students back, but it's in a safe environment that they come back and reduce the risk as much as possible. Again, David, I don't know if you want to advise on anything extra.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be staggered anyway, Sam, naturally, because certainly speaking to parents of students at university and some students I know myself who are at university, some of them are winding down now, some of them aren't. Some of them in the less infected areas are trying to keep some form of normality, whatever you may call normal these days. But there's some that have now doing an hour's worth of lectures and everything else is virtually. So they'll be potentially looking to come home anyway. So I don't think we're going to get the mass influx at Christmas that at one stage we thought. I think it will be a lot more staggered. But there is also work going on within the Borders team, within Cabinet Office, to beef up the ability to be able to monitor people and keep in touch with people who are in isolation. So all of that plays a part, but I don't think we're going to get the mass influx in December that initially we thought, because a lot of the universities are starting to wind down at different rates now.
Thank you. And just secondly, you said about perhaps a return to social distancing if there's certain criteria met and there's spread in the community. How prepared is the government for the economic side of that in terms of protecting businesses and jobs in the island, particularly having already had to do this earlier in the year?
Well, obviously, we've been through it once, Sam, so we know what to expect. The first time round, there was no rule book on how to handle COVID-19 on the Isle of Man. We've been through it, and I know the Treasury Minister and the Minister for the Department of Enterprise will work closely together to ensure that worst-case scenario, if we were having to lock down the island, then support would be there for our businesses again. But let's hope that doesn't happen. We're in a good position. If everyone remains as responsible as they have been, I'm sure we'll continue to be in this good situation. So thank you all very much for your questions. One final thing before I go. Today is the 100th and first birthday of Hector Duff. Hector's service in the Second World War is known throughout our community as his tireless work of promoting understanding of the reasons behind and the realities of World War, in particular his work in the island schools. I'm sure you will all join me in wishing Hector many happy returns. That's all for today. Stay safe and continue to do the right thing. Make the right choices for you, your loved ones, and your community. Thank you all very much. Bye-bye.